I learned just a few minutes ago from our speaker that we have a warm-up speaker. It's okay. He's very short-winded. He doesn't take long at all. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Albert.
My name's Albert, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Albert.
Hey, I got to tell you, I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I'm also a proud product of Pine Recovery. That's where I got sober in April of 1989. And as a matter of fact, I've shared with you that when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous back in 89, I heard an old-timer say, thank you, Mel. He goes, if you want to stay sober, man, you there's three things you're going to have to do. He says, one, you got to be willing to go to any lengths for your sobriety, man. Two, you got to get a big book, eh? And three, read the first 164 pages. So that willing to go to any lengths, it's stuck in my head, right? So I actually stole this book back in 1989 because I was willing to go to any lengths. You know, when I had 2 years sober, I took the book back where I stole it from, and I told the dude, I go, hey man, here's this book, hey, I snagged it from you, eh? He asked me, he goes, you still sober? And I said, yeah. He goes, you sponsoring anybody? I go, I'm working with somebody right now, eh? He says, well, then you pretty much earned it, huh? So I didn't have to pay for it, man. But I'm not suggesting if you're new to steal a book, eh? That's not what I'm suggesting, man, because that was the mentality that I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous with. And it was that mentality that kept me alive, man, through all those environments, right? So I figured, well, if I'm willing to do a beer run for beer, I should be willing to do a book run for a book, right? So I did. You know, the reason why I feel honored, eh, to warm up for Grass, eh? Grass was, other than my sponsor from Dinuba, Grass was the first person in AA that ever reached out to me. And I didn't know why, eh? You know? I was in Pine, we'd walk to the Alano Club, and one day I was on a pass, eh? I had an hour and a half pass, and you really can't do a whole lot in an hour and a half, right? I think that's why they didn't give you more time than that. But I was walking around, and I didn't really know anybody from Visalia, man. I mean, the only people from Visalia that I knew are people I did time with. And I don't know anybody in recovery, right? So I'm kind of wandering, thinking, what do I do, man? And this guy pulls up in this Bronco, man. He says, hey, you're Albert, huh? And I go, yeah, man. He goes, hey, you want to go to a movie? And I'm like, nah, that's all right, bro. I'll pass, eh? He goes, come on, man. You got to go with me. It's a good movie. And I said, nah, that's all right, eh? But thanks. And he says, it's Batman with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. And I just thought, okay. And he goes, my treat. Okay, I'll go. So we went, eh? And then he's introducing me to the fellowship. This is a guy that I would never see me kicking it with, eh? Or him kicking it with me. And he was the first example of Alcoholics Anonymous to me. Not because of what he said, because I hear people talk, and I grew up around people that talk their whole lives, eh? And a lot of them would talk out of the side of their neck, but they couldn't back it up, right? Well, it's not what Grassel said, because I didn't even understand him half the time. But it was what he did. It was what he did that attracted me, you know, to someone. I knew then, that day, that there was one person in here that's good. But through him, I met a lot more others, you know, and that's how this program welcomed me, man. It was the attraction, eh? When he took me back to Pine, he handed me a 24-hour-a-day book. And he doesn't remember this still, but he's kind of almost as much of a burnout as I am. But he says, here, and he handed me this 24-hour book. So I'm kicking back over there at the house, man, and I'm just kind of flipping through the pages. And there was this one page, and it was in April. And I got sober in April, eh? And on that page, there was a line that was underlined, and it said, provided that our intentions are to do the right thing, all will be well. And I'm trying to think, when was the last time I had intentions of doing the right thing, eh? And at that point, I did. My intentions, man, I started looking at what were my motives. You know, why was I doing this, eh? Was I doing it for me or was I, you know, for whatever? But it gave me something to think about, man. You know, if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, say, I just want to welcome you. I want to welcome you to an awesome, awesome, indescribably fellowship. You know, I couldn't tell you anything about it. I could share with you, but this is something that, like me, you're going to have to kind of figure it out for yourself, eh? And the only way you can do that is by coming here and hanging out and getting to know some of us. And that was scary for me because I don't know about you, man, but I had a lot of trust issues, eh? And I still do. But my sponsor told me, he says, you don't have to trust people. You don't. He says, the only one you got to trust is God. And if you give your trust to God, he'll put the right people. And he has. You know, I'm looking at these speakers and they got a K on it. And I'm thinking Mike Kelly, right? Choices, tapes, etc. God put him in my life, eh? I got to go to Stockton. I got to go to AANNA conventions and help record speakers. It was an introduction. I got involved. I got in service. I had four safe places when I first started walking the streets of Visalia in recovery. I could go to Pine, break bread with the guys anytime I wanted. I could go hang out at the Alano Club because they used to give out those guest membership cards when you first get here. And I used to go hang out there, man, and shoot pool. And then I met Rick Dickens on the pool table. I just call him Dictionary Rick, man, because he used to carry a big book and a dictionary, man. I would go to Rick's house, eh? He opened up his home to me. And I could go open the fridge and slap me a sandwich together, do anything I wanted. It was a safe place. I used to go to Jerry's Mufflers, man, over there when Bubba had it, you know what I mean? And I could just sit there and make a pot of coffee and kick back, drink, read, and pray, and then jam when I felt safe, you know? I want to welcome everybody that, especially those of you from out of town, that took and everyone that took time out of your lives for today to come down. I got this at the Messy Pants Winos in Selma, eh? It's like my favorite group in the valley, and some of them are here tonight. So because they gave me this, I want to share with you what they've shared with me. And then it says, why did we drink? We drank for happiness and became unhappy. We drank for joy and became miserable, man. We drank for sociability and became argumentative. We drank for friendship and made enemies. We drank for sophistication and became obnoxious. We drank for sleep and became unrested. We drank for strength and felt weak. We drank for medicine purposes and acquired health problems. We drank for relaxation and got the shakes. We drank for bravery and became afraid. We drank for confidence and became doubtful. We drank to make conversation easier and slurred our speech. We drank to feel heavenly and ended up feeling like hell, eh? We drank to forget and were forever haunted. We drank for freedom and became slaves. We drank to erase problems and saw them multiply. We drank to cope with life and invited death. the reason that I came here today was to support my AA family. What do you call those people that, like, they can speak five languages? Yeah. Okay, if you speak four languages, okay, you're trilingual, quadlingual, and you're what? Okay, well, I speak five languages, eh? So I'm actually here for you because I speak English, Spanish, sarcasm, AA, and I speak Grassl. So I understand Grassl, and if you don't, I'll gladly translate, eh? God bless you, and enjoy your day, man.
Love it. At this time, it's my pleasure to introduce our main speaker. I got to tell you, the first time I met him was at a meeting unlike any meeting I had been to. I had been to several meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous, and one night my sponsor told me, "Come on, Jack, I'm going to take you to a meeting like nothing you've ever seen." And he took me to a place in Farmersville. And we walked in there, and Grass was there, and he was speaking. And I knew that I had found home when that meeting was over. I knew that I was where I needed to be, and it's my hope that you'll have that experience today. It's my pleasure to introduce somebody who's been an absolute positive influence in my recovery, Grass.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Grassaholic, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace and people like you, very strong sponsorship. Lots of retreats and conferences and before and after fellowship stuff. I haven't had any mood-altering drugs, alcohol, or them funny cigarettes for about 32 and a half years, and for that I'm eternally grateful. Now that's out of the way. That's a preamble. So we got to do a disclaimer here. Why in the goddamn hell is he dressed like that? Well, I gave you a break. I'm not here in pink pants. 6 years ago, I did a fundraiser for the Lionel Club. I had pink pants on, and I had the other velour sport coat on. And they were raising money by selling enchiladas in the parking lot, like for $19 a piece or some shit. It was a fundraiser. I had two. Anyway, I'm buzzing around. Busy, busy, busy. Whether you're drunk or sober, it's still busy, busy, busy. Anyway, this cat, she stands about that tall. I could put a beer right on top of her head. Her name's Stogie. And she walks up to me and says, "Would you sign my book for me, please?" And I said, "Well, sure, $5. Are you serious?" I went, "No." So she hands me the book, and I always go to that front page, you know, the one that says blank, right? And I say, "If you want to drink, that's your business. If you don't want to drink, that's our business." Then I put a big double A on there with a triangle, and she looks me right in the eye and says, "Are you gay?" And I haven't been asked that before. And I went, "Why do you ask?" She says, "Those pink pants." And I says, "These pink pants are a dead man's golf clothes." A long time ago, just for the record, Claude Rutherford was the mayor of Tulare, and he was a very fancy dresser. I have all of his dead clothes. His daughter Carla gave me two garbage bags of all of his fancy clothes. And they're all PGA. You know who that is? They're not $25 pants. I've got a pair of Oscar de la Renta black pants from him, that they're about $200, and they go with Oscar de la Renta tuxedos, and they just happen to be there. They never wrinkle. You can take them on a golf course, get dirt on them. Hell, you can start shoveling shit with them and just go like that, and it goes right off. Yeah, I don't think I've ever had them cleaned. But I do keep them hung up so they keep pressed, and I keep them in the closet there so they don't speak out at me. And I keep all those weird colored stuff that Claude's daughter gave me. She gave me two colored pink, two colored lime green, dark green, and lavender, and plaid. And so I'm giving you a break today. No pink pants, and I didn't wear the velour. But can you imagine? I had my last Saturday night over in Paso Robles. I had my Oscar de la Renta pants on. This is a formal coat from Duck Dynasty. Normally it costs $450 to $500. We got a blonde friend of ours who's on sabbatical right now. She'll be home shortly. She went online and found this Duck Dynasty coat for $99. There was only one, and it was a 42 long. Ta-da! Book it, Dano! You should have seen my wife, because she didn't know I had it. And I put it on inside the hotel room, started walking out, and I had a camo bow tie. I had to pay $20 to rent that son of a bitch. She goes, "Where did you get that?" And I says, "Online. You can get them there, too." I'm not an online kind of guy. Okay, everybody knows I still use cassette tapes. I'm a some product of a man called Cliff Roach. I was 1 year sober when I met him up in Yosemite a long time ago. He's been out to Richie Barn like 4 or 5 times. And love that man. Mike, just a piece of it. Mike is going to record Richie Barn on what, the second time? And so I'm making a deal with Cliff on the phone. Out there at Richie Barn, Clarence Richie's got a roping arena out there. So here's what we're going to do. Larry Sloan's my buddy. We're going to get a roping horse and put Cliff Roach on a horse. And we're going to take one of those nice felt hats and stomp the shit out of it. You know, bend it all up and put it on him and try to make an ass out of him on a horse. On the phone, he says, "No goddamn horse, but I might do a stick pony." Now, if Carolyn were here right now, she could attest, he can attest too. She made a stick pony, and the head of it is made out of 49er material. But you can't tell it's so small. I noticed it like that. Anyway, I got this stick pony back of the truck. It's time to put him together out there in the dark and put his hat on. I reach in the truck and hand him this. And he goes, "Oh, God, am I going to have to ride that?" And I say, "You're the one that said it." So as he approaches the stage, Mike plays in a loop. What? Bonanza. He's got it hooked in loop 13 times. And as that song is playing, Cliff Roach is walking around, acting like a stupid fool, which he is. And then all of a sudden, he's so tired of being stupid, he threw the hat on the ground and threw the stick pony in the phone and then pointed at Mike and says, "Turn that off." He says, "You're all sick." And he said I was certifiable lunatic. I got here as a legend almost. I drank for 25 years straight. Well, let's back up a second. Before that, I come from a fine Christian home. I think it's an improper place to raise children. It's Catholicism. I suffer from two diseases, you know, Catholicism and alcoholism, and now I got a two-step program called type 2 diabetes. There's only two steps, you know, watch what you eat, a little bit of needle, and you're good to go. Through all the Catholicism of 8 grades taught by the nuns, I can tell you a story about the nuns. And then I made a big mistake at the end of the eighth grade. I decided to make a commitment, step three, that I was going to become a Catholic priest. Holy shit, yes. Just look at that. Doesn't that make you go, WTF, man? What the hell were you thinking? I mean, why would a wild and crazy guy? But I started thinking about this 2 years, you know, sixth and seventh grade, because you have to make this commitment. What's the commitment of a priest supposed to be? It's called celibacy, because you're actually married to what they call Holy Mother of the Church. So I made that commitment. And so for 3 years, freshman, sophomore, junior year, I had this commitment. And as long as you have that commitment, you can put up with all the bullshit those Jesuit priests can throw at you. And believe me, 9-period day, no electives, no PE. First year was 3 periods of Latin per day. Yada, yada, yada. You can see where I'm going. The Marine Corps, the Catholic Church, they got all the money in Rome. And the best speakers for retreats or circuit speakers for a big conference are these Jesuit priests that get sober. And you know how Grassel messes with them, especially if he knows them personally. He walks up to him and says, can you believe 15 years after you became a priest, you found God and Jesus in Alcoholics Anonymous? Isn't that special? They usually want to bitch slap me for saying it, but it's the truth. I speak the truth, even when it hurts. This thing called, what's it called? Obsession. My wife is really good at spotting obsession and compulsive personality. She can look at a sandbox of a 5-year-old kid playing in the sand with her Tonka toys. They go through happy, sad, beating the shit out of one another, and back to being friends again in less than, 5 to 10 minutes. You agree, they can do that. But then they grow up and they're affected by church, culture, media, parents, etc. And then things change. But she can actually look at 4 or 5 of those playing in a sandbox and point to that one over there and say, looks like we're saving a seat for that one right there. Now, she did this one day inadvertently to our daughter-in-law's, our granddaughter, is 5 years old, acting out in the front room up there in Sacramento. And she shouldn't have said it. She turns to me and says, looks like we're saving the seat for that one. Well, that's code for something, right? Our daughter-in-law, Nicole, overheard what she said to me and come over and got pissed. She doesn't even know what it's code for, but she knew that it was something derogative. And I finally let her cool down a while and say, listen, we don't know if this is going to happen or not, but she's a grassle. She's a carrier. That compulsive personality, just look at them all except for Michael. The rest of us are all party animals. I just spent a bunch of time last Saturday night with the Grassel crowd from Texas and Washington State. Brother Roger was there with us. Oh, God. My drug of choice. That's a Beechcraft. He's coming in. He's going to cross right over there. He's going to put on his left turn signal. He's going to go right down there, and he's going to put a loop. Maybe he'll crash right there. Boy, you can get to a speaker meeting in one of those in about 40 minutes. So, seminary, Fresno State for a little bit. No, before I went to Fresno State, I made another drastic problem decision. I decided to go into Marine Corps. I go into Marine Corps 64. Stanley goes into Marine Corps 65. Roger goes into Marine Corps. 66? Yeah, we're all in a row. And Michael flips us all a bird and says, you stupid people, I'm not going in the Marine Corps. He never even went in the service, and I still got a resentment. But it's a justifiable resentment. The Marine Corps, I never had any confidence in my life to speak of. What am I? I'm just a pimple-faced, skinny kid. They call me Pinchy Flaco Weirdo Loco down at the Pine Recovery. Her name is Adelia Costa. She said that in the background one day on the phone. I said, I heard that. The good news is it's actually a compliment. I'll get there. This, where am I? Get out of the Marine Corps. Got my only fight in my life in Oceanside, you know, where they throw chairs in a bar and all that, and got out before the peace showed up. But the Marine Corps taught me how to cuss and drink, because I didn't used to do that much. I used to not be that much of a drinker. But boy, when I got home, it changed my life. All my rowdy friends that I used to know, we'd all go out, and I love Friday night. I used to fantasize Friday night. Why am I talking about fantasizing Friday night? Because the shrink of record for 3 damn years, paying him $65 out of pocket, because we're going to marriage counseling. You got the picture now. So I'm going to see Mike. It's him and her against me, and he's talking to me about all this weird shit. There's really, in 3 years, there's one thing I memorized that he said a long time ago. I'm going to give it to you because it took me a half a day to memorize it. It's what goes on with almost all of our relationships with one another, whether you're dealing with one of us or the normies out there. Partial misunderstanding is the normal and predictable outcome of every attempt at human communication. If you want to write it down later, I'll do it for you. Basically, what it means is, because I asked Mike one day, and says, is that true? He says, yes, it is. He says, it means that if you put your agreement down on contract, you have it notarized, and you both sign it off and date it, there's going to be a partial misunderstanding somewhere. So during your sobriety, if something comes along that has a partial misunderstanding to it, ask for the higher power to have a little bit of grace in between to allow you to have a little bit of time so that you can get over it. Yesterday, I wrote down an aww moment was, I think that happiness is the ability to be annoyed without bothering you. How's that for bullshit? Happiness is the ability to be annoyed. You know how some people are annoying? They annoy you, they follow you around. And then take the reverse of that, go to negativity. Most negative people are annoyed a lot and very critical. And since life is too short, you don't really want to be on that. I found out also in our 24-hour book that happiness is a byproduct. There's no such thing as happiness. There is only, what do they call it? Moments of happiness. God gave us something up here. It's called a 10 megabyte hard disk. That's what the computer geeks call it. A 10 megabyte hard disk that allow us to remember moments of happiness. Where does the drunk mind go to? He doesn't go to the memory of jail. He goes to spotting that foxy blonde at the end of the bar till he was too drunk to even walk. He should have left when he should. If you want what we got and are willing to do this stuff, then we got stuff to do. I got to do one or two drunk logs. I'll give you one good drunk log in Mazatlan. Everybody know where Mazatlan is? It's a lot of beer south of the border. I couldn't even make it on one flight the first time I went down there. I lost a... What'd I lose? I lost a generator. Oh, here comes the ambulance. How do I know that's an ambulance? Because it's got AMBLANCE right on the side of it. If you don't believe me, drive over there after he parks and you can tell. Why in the hell did I send an ambulance while I'm talking? Where was I at? Mazatlan. Oh, God. We used to fly down there for 10 days and stay drunk 24/7 for 10 days. All you got to do is have T-shirt Levi's, enough money for what? Many. Dos Cervezas, Clover War, and Pacifico, Corona. Oh, my wife used to get so pissed. We used to go to a place called the Shrimp Bucket. The Shrimp Bucket in Mazatlan is owned by a guy in Kern. Kern County, down in Bakersfield. He has a Mexican partner. I already know this so that I can go get, you know, what they call it, get a little juice at the shrimp bucket. What pissed my wife off the most is while we're in the front restaurant area, I spot what's happening over there in the kitchen. And these goddamn chefs were kicking out really good, fresh grilled shrimp right out of the platter, and they're landing on the floor right over there. So I can't walk, so I crawled. And I'm in the kitchen, crawling around underneath these people, picking up these nice, they look fresh. Hell, there was no dirt on them or nothing. They fell on the floor. And I'm picking them up. Of course, you have to fight them cockroaches that are about 3 inches long. I'm not shitting you. 3 inches long. They're big. It's mine. Anyways, she come over there and give me the, you know, what for? Don't you think you've had a few too many? No, it's because you've had a few too few, and that's your goddamn problem. Oh, shit. Don't get much of that anymore. Oh, I would be remiss if I didn't say, I have to say, welcome all you tweakers. Are there any tweakers in here? No tweakers? Oh, Jesus, come on. That's the end of the world. Really? Well, I can bring that up as long as I have a caveat to it, and that is, all you got to do is catch alcoholism. This disease we have is the best disease, the best progressive terminal disease that you can get. Why is it that good? Because you can get well on this disease, not cured, boy. That's a hard statement. You can get well. Hell, you can get weller than well. You can go become a damn attorney. Hell, you might even become a Superior Court judge. I won't go that far right now. I got a friend of mine that's a judge in Tulare County, and he shows up once a year out of my house. We have a hoedown once a year on the third weekend of March, if you want to come. File notice of intent, that's what we call it. We got a... In Matsalon, we drank 24/7. This particular evening, it's midnight, and I'm dancing around inside. We took, you know, two planes, four people in each one. We even take ISIS to take meat with us. Pat, what's her called? Her name is Picky Pat and Brad Binda. They take their own water with them, Jesus, and they bring their own meat. And I got real inebriated this particular night, and it's midnight, and I don't have any of my clothes on, and I'm running around the kitchen, and these two women are chasing me with cameras, and I'm trying to dodge them, and I dodged them all the way out the door into the back patio area. It's a private condo area right on the beach. And I'm trying to hide behind the palm trees, you know, going from palm tree to bush and coming around. And finally, I dove in the swimming pool in the shallow end. And I peeled my forehead. That didn't slow me down. I bailed out of the pool and I took off running out in the dark, out into the ocean. And some Mexican security guard out there drug me out of the water, pulled me back up the beach. They come walking over. Does this belong to you? Yes, my wife. I passed out. I mean, I went to sleep that night. And I woke up the next morning to a thud. Okay, I don't know if you've ever slept next to your wife and been in bed together and inadvertently, that's the L-Y word, inadvertently, I rolled over and bumped her face nose to nose, boom, boom, you know, right like that. And I'm staring at my wife's face and she opens her eyes and I looked at her. I didn't say anything because I didn't know what the hell to say. And she says, do you remember anything last night? And I says, cat, all I remember is a bra and a broom. And she says, you were wonderful and they got it all on pictures. We're going to sell them. That's fun, okay? See, there's fun and trouble. And then what's the last one? Trouble. Right. I got off here at about 11 o'clock. Where's 11 o'clock is? Well, that's Behar's bar when I was still having fun. I didn't hit a bottom. I peaked. I was so goddamn cool, I damn near froze to death. I've said it before. It's pretty true. What did David Looper call me? a weenie alcoholic. Weenie all the way. I mean, the irony of it is, my red-headed, freckle-faced kid raised his hand at the age of 22 as a weenie alcoholic, walked into AA, went with Courtney R. I was told never to sponsor your kids. Okay, I'll just tell them what to do anyway. The Roger and Michael, or Roger and Brian, are the three of our family that are in AA. Dad never made it here. So, I go to Al-Anon. This is my third time in Al-Anon now. I've been in Al-Anon this time for about 13 years. My wife says, because she was there a long time ago when I wasn't there, and she says, you keep your goddamn AA mouth shut in Al-Anon. And if they want you to talk, they will ask you to talk. Otherwise, zip it. I mean, that's pretty point blank. Okay, so that's pretty much what I do. The Al-Anon thing that goes on over there is because I have to deal with a lot of people that have codependency issues because I ended up going to another level. We'll discuss in a little bit. But when you go to Al-Anon, you have what's called a qualifier. I was in a meeting the other night. Your qualifier is your drunk husband or drunk wife or drunk kid or whatever, or your speed freak kid or whatever. Anyway, I got three qualifiers. What's that mean? I'm triple qualified to be an Al-Anon. I got an alcoholic son, alcoholic brother, alcoholic dad, and I had an alcoholic dad or grandpa in South Dakota I never met, but I found out. So I'm overqualified just on one side of the family. The only reason I'm bringing that up is we need to bring Al-Anon up once in a while, this codependency issue that is ingrained in us also. I have major codependency problems. The good news is that you can get well in AA. When Jack was talking about Farmersville, man, now he was talking about the good shit. I got to tell you what happened the first time I was there. See, there, somebody just told me I got 5 minutes. The first night I'm in Farmersville, I'm sitting in the back, minding my own. How many people used to be there? 85? 85? People on the walls, people sitting on the floors, 3 inches of water in the men's bathroom. You froze to death in the wintertime and you sweat. You had to take 2 showers, one before and after. And I'm minding my own business in the back, not knowing what did I do by coming to this aw shit when it goes, sounds like it's a boring ass bozo meeting. How lame can it get? So it got lamer than lame. This lady named Mel, if you ever get to run into her somewhere, ask her about this situation. It's a true story. She said, is there anybody here that would like to take a 30-day chip? And that's not how you say it. What word is missing? Continuous. There's a big difference. She said, is there anybody here who'd like to take a 30-day chip? I saw these two wolf-asses dudes kind of stand up and start walking up, so I said, well, I'll follow them. I don't know, but you know, I'm going to make a commitment not to drink for 30 days, right? So they're in front of me, and I found out right off the bat, I'm a quick learner. They go huggy-huggy, kissy-kissy shit, and then she lets go, and then you start to walk away, and you say, my name's Asshole, and I'm an alcoholic, and everybody goes, woo! Because Farmersville was a very loud clapping meeting. You could catch a clap in Farmersville. Did that go over your head too far? True story. You can catch this thing called the element of enthusiasm. And that's where people get to have a happy life. Catch the element of enthusiasm. So, I know the drill. Mel comes over to hug me. She hands me the chip in this hand and puts her arms around me. And while I have a hold of her, I whispered in her ear something stupid. I says, this is really great. She says, what's great? And I says, to make a commitment for 30 days. She goes, how many days sober you got? And I said, I think 5. She grabbed a hold of that chip. I got 2 witnesses. She grabbed a hold of that chip, pointed to the back of the room, and says, come back when you got 30 days. I mean, she hurt my feelings. I had my tail stuck completely up my ass. I couldn't even walk straight. I'm walking back, and my mind talked to me. Has your mind ever talked to you? And it said, I won't say it out loud, but you know what I'm talking about. Screw AA. Jesus Christ, I come all the way over here and, you know, committed to not drinking ever again? Come on. That's insanity. That's step 2. I got back to my seat and pretty much said, no, no more. By the time 3 days went by, it's called a resentment, right? You know, justifiable resentments are harder to fall out of place. So it took about 3 days. And then I remembered something. Whatever alcoholic goes for. I cannot believe how much fun those people not drinking were having, because I've already committed myself to not drinking for the rest of my life. Jesus, what a boring life. Can you imagine how bored you're going to be? You can't drink when it's the answer to the world. Jesus, if you drink like, I mean, I hold John Daniels like this. I can hold a half gallon. Can you see him? I got him right here, John Daniel. You might call him Jack if you want to, but I have a personal relationship with him, so it's John Daniels. There's a disclaimer on the back of John. It says, distilled spirits. Dr. Carl Jung is the one that talks about the distilled spirit. My spirit has been distilled. I guess it's free minute, if you will. No, it's full minute or free minute. The good news is that people used to say that damn Farmersville meeting was a click. Those people are crazy out there. Oh, shoot. They broke all the rules. Crosstalk, shoot spit wads, slap each other around the head. You know what I'm talking about. They broke all the rules. And I could see, I'm no dummy, I'm a quick study, I could see that there were all parts of society in there. That guy's a judge, and that guy's an attorney, and those are farmers. I know some of them. And the 5th chapter had the biggest group in there because they always parked in front. And then we had all this other people that worked for PG&E and Southern California Edison and Tulare County Health Ship. All walks of life are in that room. I saw a guy in there once. He had a 3-piece suit standing in the corner. His name was Doug B. He's passed away now. He used to passed away up in Coeur d'Alene. God, he was sober for 1,000 years, I think. If Reyes were here right now, he used to be Reyes' sponsor, he could tell you about Doug B. He was kind of like David Looper. That's the reason I got to give honorable mention to David Looper, because he's the one that nicknamed me a weenie alcoholic. And he was right. He couldn't believe that it was true that not only David, but also Brian, waltzed into AA, put her hands up, and said, okay. Basically, the question is, you willing to kiss a duck in the ass? Well, if I got to, but I'm never going to have fun again. See, that's the problem. How am I going to have fun when I'm a fun junkie? So I used to live on the edge of shit. You know what I'm talking about? Your eyes can glaze over and you can start to froth at the mouth, because I'm going to talk about really having a... We're going to push a Coke machine off a 16-story hotel and watch it splatter on the street down below. Hopefully nobody walks out the front door. Now that's living on the edge. I mean, that's pushing it right over the edge. I didn't push it. I was a deniable witness. Anyway, nowadays, the longer I'm sober, the further back from the edge I get to live. And the further back from the edge I get to live, is I don't have to put up with annoyances as much, whether it's politics during this last week that's all up and down and all over the place. I pay a little bit of attention, but I don't go there because it's an uproar. I think they need a meeting. No. Oh, you know what's code in our house when my wife thinks I need a meeting? She says, I think you need a treatment. And she says it just like that. And she started drinking again after 3 years sober. She went from box wine to screw-on cap wine. And then in the last 5 years, she's graduated to Maker's Mark and Crown and Pendleton and what's that other gin? Sapphire gin? Weird color gin, isn't it? Anywho, she started making these double Cosmos. That's a martini, everybody. Do I have to show you what a martini glass looks like? It's got a stem on it. Notice how I'm leaving the female pinky finger stick out right here? That's called, what's that called? Sarcasm. That's what it is. So she makes a double Cosmo to sit in front of the TV when we're going to watch the evening news, right? I've got the corner lounge chair in the corner, in the loser section, right over there. It's about 15 feet in the corner, and I'm sitting in Happy, Joyous, and Free in my loser section. And she will turn to me and say, "Cheers." And I say, "Cheers to you too, bitch." And she will smile at me, that sick smile. She lost that pre-Al-Anon tick that she had at the back door long time ago. God, I never should have got here. It's ironic that I actually got here, because I've been pulled over between 22 and 23 times. Everybody knows what field sobriety is. You ever been pulled over? Jesus. Ka-ching! That's the sound. I had learned to talk my way out of it because Brother Roger is ex-CHP. Anytime when we had a cattle ranch up there in Madera County, born and raised on a cattle ranch, no horses and all that shit. Roger would teach us how to do at least 4 of the field sobrieties drunk on our ass. Certifiable lunatic drunk. Whether it's walking the line, whether it's the alphabet, etc. So, this particular night before Farm Show, 32 and a half, coming up in February, it'll be 33 years. I'm at Vahar's, the local watering hole. Vahar's used to be. I bought and paid for it. I decided when I walked in that Melvin Hickman had a brand new white 1986 Corvette parked out there, and I went, "Oh shit! Never driven one. My brother has one. Never would let me borrow it. After I loaned him my car for a whole summer, he still wouldn't let me borrow his vet one time." True story. I held on to that one. You know, that's a keeper. Anyway, I take off with the Corvette. I go down to, where's it, Page Avenue, cross the tracks, come up behind Lampy Lumber, go up the back way, come back in the Vahar's, and man, that some bitch runs. And I flinged him the keys, just like he flinged me the keys from one side of the bar to the other. And he caught him in midair. And then I went and sat there a little bit, and my mind talked to me, and it said, "Damn, that was fun. Let's go do that again." I said, "Yes, I'm talking to myself. Yes. Hey, Melvin, can I go one more time?" He goes, "No problem. Ka-ching. I can still catch him." And it was at least 20 feet throw. This big, tall dude next to me, his name is Sam, got to know him in jail. He's about a foot taller than me and says, "Can I go with you?" Little did I know his family had murdered a couple people in West Tulare, and Tulare PD had never caught him, but I didn't know that. I just go, "Okay, so let's get in the car." So we hop in the vet and we take off south, and God, before I even got to Page Avenue, here's this Christmas tree following me. It's just all pretty lights. And I'm going, "What the?" And I pulled right and parked right on top of the tracks. Him and Sam and I got out of that car, left the doors wide open, left that Corvette sitting right on top of the tracks. And we walked back to have a moment with this dude. I was going to tell him who he's really talking to, right? Don't you know who I am? I'm general manager of the universe, for God's sake. He put Sam in the back of the car because there's a history there, right? So he asked me to do what I'm supposed to do, right? So I did it. I did 3 or 4 field sobriety. Passed them all. And you know when you pass them. You know when you pass them. And I said, I passed them, didn't I? And he goes, yes, you did. I says, and what's up, dude? And he goes, Mr. Grassel, would you please turn around and put your hands behind your back? And I said, whoa! That's how you pull back on the reins on a horse, right? Whoa! I could say something else, but he goes, David, I think you would pass them, but I think you are drunk. Would you please put your hands behind? Okay, then my brain said, uh-oh. So now I'm like this. Sam's already in a back seat. I don't know if you've been in a back seat of one of those things, but a long, lanky son of a bitch is a sardine in the back of that car. And my knees are in my mouth, and my feet are up against the back seat, and I'm fiddling around back here. This is crucial right here. This is part of the moment of clarity. And I'm fiddling around back here, and Sam goes, Jesus, is this your first one? I says, hell yes, it's going to be my last. He goes, oh, bullshit. Back in the 502 days, you weren't in trouble till you got the 3rd DUI. So I already know. He says, you got 2 more coming. Why are you so concerned? I said, and I can remember myself saying, this ain't never going to happen to me again as long as I live. I don't know what I'm going to do. So I made a big mistake the following morning. I won't go through running into the plaintiff at the back door at 6 o'clock in the morning. Ooh, Jesus. She had that pre-Al-Anon tick when she walked down inside the house. And I heard every word that she didn't say. And it said, you better get your shit together, dude. So the most stupid thing you do after you spent 3 years in marriage counseling is call that jackass that you hate the most. Call Mike Schaefer on the phone. Yo, dudes, need to see you. Come and see me next Monday at 1:30. Screw that. I need to see you today. I'm an important person. He says, I got a half hour lunch break. Come in at noon. So I'm sitting across his desk in his office, not in that place that they have us go fight it out, you know, in the open arena. And now I know why he's got such a wide desk. Because I'm sitting on this side of the desk, and he says to me, what's up, grasshole? I mean, this whole grasshole shit started a long time ago. And I says, I got busted last night, left it there, you know, no sense giving him any meat. He goes, okay, what are you going to do about it? I've never seen you people. I don't even know who you people are. And I went just like this. Well, I don't think I can drink anymore. Probably need to go to ANA or maybe even go to a treatment center. I shouldn't have said that. Because then he says, whoa, David, I don't think you need to go to a treatment center, but you got 2 of them right. He prints out Danielle's phone number and this goofy bastard that forgot to pick me up for my first meeting, Claude Rutherford. And he put those 2 sticky notes on my side of the table. Then he leans all the way across the table and puts his 2 fingers on the sticky notes and says, this is his directions, prescription. If you do what these 2 people tell you to do, you don't ever have to come back in my office as long as you live. So what's going to come out of my mouth? Why, you son of a bitch. You've known this for 3 years, $65 an hour, out of pocket, no insurance. I mean, God damn. I said, why didn't you tell me? You should not do that. David, you're the most rationalizing, justifying son of a bitch that's ever been in my office. You can talk yourself out of a wet paper bag. The best part about it is I know you're getting the same way I'm getting. It's time to close, or getting close anyway. I need to go to that part of the saving grace. we all know that the saving grace is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just not just AA. The prescription is the 12 steps. I was supposed to read to you Frank Ross. Everybody remembers Frank Ross. This is what he would do to me every time I go into his house. It's the third paragraph in the foreword in the 12 and 12. I don't even have my reading glasses on. AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature, which if practiced, just like Tiger Woods, which is practiced as a way of life, can expel, that's a big word, the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer, I'm no suffering alcoholic, suffer to become happily and usefully whole. Holy shit. All in one paragraph? I mean, that's diamonds in the rough. The 12 steps are the prescription that are designed for living that we've been given by our Creator. I could go through all that, but I'm gonna close it off. It's getting too hot. There are two things that I use this book for. One is for doing what do you call them? Eulogies. There's 2.5 pages in here that you could do a eulogy for an alcoholic. And then the one where the sticky note's at. I learned this from Sister Maurice. She's probably got, 1,000 years sober now. Sister Maurice is this tall. You can literally put a beer on her head. I took a picture with her at a conference down at Marriott in Burbank. I was kneeling down and was shoulder to shoulder. Boy, that means it's time to quit. Anyway, so I'm giving her credit for the closing. It's on page 436 of the third edition. Me, an alcoholic, you know who he is. Here I found an ingredient that had been lacking in any other effort I have ever made to save myself. Here was power, in italics. Here was power to live to the end of any given day. A power to have the courage to face the next day. Duh. The power to have friends. You got friends? Yeah. The power to help people. The power to be sane. The power to stay sober. So we are given the power to stay sober one day at a time by divine intervention, if you will. Won't get into that. It's hot and I gotta quit. Thank you for coming. My name's Grass and I'm an alcoholic.